Do rising gas prices have you dreaming about going electric? Are you wondering how much an EV would cost and how much it could potentially save you? This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to help us do the math and answer all your questions about making the switch to EV are Wired Magazine staff writer Ariane Marshall and Electric Vehicle Association of Ohio board members Chris Selleck and Rick Liston. Thank you for being here, everybody.
Thanks for inviting us.
Yes, thank you so much.
Good to be here.
Ariane, how many U.S. drivers have made the switch to EVs?
That is a great question that I should know off the top of my head. I think it's somewhere around 8% at this point, but it is still growing every quarter. So I think there are a lot of sort of doom and gloom headlines about EVs, but we should keep in mind that more people are still buying EVs than they did, you know, in the last few months.
Well, you mentioned about 8%, and that I saw Chris nodding his head in agreement. We also are lucky because he's the executive director of the Electric Vehicle Association for the nation, so he's got a lot of expertise. Ariane, worldwide, 25% of new car sales are EVs, based on the information I read. What do you think are some of the reasons the U.S. is lagging behind in that percentage?
Yeah, there are definitely a few reasons. One is that the U.S. has, just in the past year or so, really cut its government supports for EVs. President Trump called this getting rid of the electric vehicle mandate. There wasn't really a mandate. No one was forcing anyone to buy electric vehicles. But the government was giving significant tax rebates to people or tax credits to people who bought EVs. And now those have gone away. So that's been a big signal to U.S. automakers that they don't need to spend as much time and money at this point going through the really expensive and complicated process of transitioning to electric vehicles. And then kind of on the other side of the ledger, you have other automakers, global automakers, really going all steam ahead on this, on electric vehicles, particularly in China, which has really led the charge at this point. Chinese automakers are making not only inexpensive electric vehicles, but really great electric vehicles. So people are really getting their bang for their buck in other parts of the world, and they are really seeing it pencil out in terms of the price up front and then also what they're paying for to fuel their vehicles with electricity versus gas cars. So I think those are two of the kind of big reasons why we're seeing the U.S. kind of fall behind here.
And Chris, we as U.S. consumers can't buy those lower cost Chinese EVs, can we?
No, certainly not yet. One of the largest automakers from China is BYD. None of them are allowed in this country to be sold in this country. But what's curious is that the Chinese automakers, led by that company in particular, are setting up manufacturing in North America, in Mexico already. And I think last month, the company signed a deal with Canada to begin manufacturing. But they are a dominant car manufacturer, especially for EVs.
Yeah. Go ahead, Rick.
Yeah, and I'd just like to interject here. I have a family member who lives in Thailand, and we visit there quite frequently. And I've had the opportunity not to drive these Chinese electric vehicles, but I have had the opportunity to visit many of the showrooms in Thailand. And these, I have to emphasize, these really are high-quality vehicles. They're very well made, which is why they've been so successful, competing on the global market. In Thailand, BYD and other Chinese manufacturers have built plants in Thailand where Thai workers are building Chinese cars in Thailand and selling them to their local, to their domestic market. Hmm. I think it's one of the reasons why some of these other regions of the world, China in particular, are becoming so much more competitive on the global scene.
Yeah. Well, Chris, why do you think the U.S. still has such a relatively small percentage of new car sales that are EVs and hybrids? I mean, I know Ariane said not to fall into the gloom and doom trap, that it's higher than it used to be, but why do you think it's still relatively small?
Well, Until the last few years, the range of the typical electric vehicle was more limited in comparison to the gas vehicles that we're all accustomed to driving. And Americans, we love our freedom. We love the idea that we can get on the road and go anywhere. In reality, most Americans make one trip of more than 200 miles once or twice a year. So, you know, we're in the habit of having bigger cars with bigger fuel tanks, but we don't really use those vehicles. So in comparison, electric cars until the last few years did not go as far as the typical gas or diesel vehicle. And I think that there was legitimate, understandable concern or hesitation about the range of vehicles. The range and the availability of charging locations today to be able to travel between cities is not really an issue. We have members, people who live in Cincinnati and Dayton in northern Kentucky, who do routinely drive to other states, drive to Florida, drive to California, and so forth. It's very easy to do. It's very affordable to do today. Why electric vehicles have become such a political hot button is a question probably for another show, but I think the politics, the political environment in our country today certainly continue to impact how quickly people adopt EVs. There's also a learning curve to all of this, is that electric vehicles are indeed the next innovation of personal transportation. There are different technologies which are highly efficient compared to gas cars. They save the typical owner a significant amount of money on fuel alone. Electricity is 30%, electricity is 60% less expensive than gasoline or diesel fuel. So the fuel savings for a typical household are very, very significant, but most people aren't aware of that. On top of that, maintenance costs for an electric vehicle are way less. How can that be? In a typical gas car, there are more than 2,000 moving parts in the engine, the transmission, the total drivetrain. Those moving parts need to be lubricated, maintained, serviced, and they eventually break or wear out, have to be replaced. In an electric car, there are 200 or fewer moving parts. There's one or two electric motors, which have very few moving parts themselves. Most of these vehicles do not have a transmission in the traditional sense, so there's a lot less to maintain. There's no oil changes. We do have to rotate the tires. We do change the wiper blades occasionally. But there's so much less maintenance to do that the typical EV driver spends a lot less money on maintenance. That's not widely understood yet. And so it takes a while, and volunteers like Rick and others who already own and drive and have learned those benefits do a lot of public events in Cincinnati, in Dayton, throughout the state, helping people understand that there are significant cost savings, performance, and other benefits, including health and environmental benefits from the fact that EVs pollute less because they don't have any tailpipes.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk about EVs for the full hour today. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. And we're going to get into the specifics of all those different cost savings that you referenced, Chris. But first of all, Ariane, are you seeing more interest in EVs in the U.S. because of spiking gas prices since the start of the war in Iran? Are more people thinking, hey, maybe this is for me?
I'm definitely seeing people have more interest, thinking more deeply about it. But it's, I think, especially in the new car market, we haven't quite seen the quick adoption that I think maybe some EV advocates were looking for. And I think that's for a few reasons. One is that EVs are still a little more expensive than your standard gas car. So it's a real commitment. And of course, all new cars are really expensive these days. There was a great report that came out of the Wall Street Journal a few weeks ago that showed that something like 1 million people had dropped out of the new car market just in the past few years. That means they're focusing on buying used vehicles because they simply can't afford new cars. So I know that's one problem. And the other problem is that automakers aren't quite offering the as wide of a selection of EVs as they had once planned to. There are still many more kinds of EVs on sale right now than there were, 2 years ago, maybe even 1 year ago. But people aren't necessarily finding exactly the car they need. That said, we have seen a ton of activity in the used EV market, where I think people can get really great deals on cars that are really only just 2 or 3 years old. They really have kind of the latest in technology, maybe not quite the, right what's on sale right now, but the stuff that was on sale 2 years ago is still pretty great. And there are some really great deals. And I've been hearing from folks who sell used EVs that they simply cannot find enough of these used EVs to sell. They have people coming in, kind of beating down their doors saying, I want one of these. Gas prices are driving me crazy. It's hard to find them right now.
Rick, talk to us about used EVs. I know that's one of your areas of expertise. Are they hard to find, easy to find? It seems like used cars in general are fairly expensive. How do used EVs stack up?
Yeah, that's changed a lot just recently in the last 3 to 4 months. I mean, as recently as late 2025, used EV prices were somewhere between 10 and 15% lower than the comparable gas car.
Really?
Yes. Lots of reasons I think that's true. As Chris mentioned, anytime there's anything new, anytime there's a new technology, people are less certain. People are comfortable going out buying gas cars because they've done it all their lives. They've never many have never considered owning an EV. And that natural transition tends to suppress the market somewhat. And the concerns that we've talked about, range and things like that, that people who haven't lived with EVs don't understand how easy it is to live with EVs. That has changed. Okay, that 10 to 15% delta difference between used EV prices and used gas car prices has largely gone away for the reasons that have been mentioned. As gas prices go up, as people pay more and more to fuel their gas cars at the pump, they're naturally inclined, especially if they're looking to replace a vehicle, to look for alternatives. And many times those alternatives are these used EVs. Having said that, even though used EVs are not as readily available as they were 4-6 months ago, they still are available, and they still represent a very, very good value for someone looking to purchase a replacement car. And the savings, of course, as Chris has kind of alluded to, start right off the bat. You can still, I did in preparation for another talk I gave earlier this week, I was looking, my particular car was offered in both an electric vehicle version and a gas vehicle version. The two cars are very, very similar and therefore easy to compare. And even now, I was just on websites 2-3 days ago, the electric vehicle was available for a slight 3-5% lower price than the gas vehicle. So the barrier, the cost of entry, if you will, is not what it is when you're looking at new EVs, when you're looking at the used EV market. And remember, the savings begin right off the bat. I running the numbers again, when gas prices were running around $4.25, $4.39, for somebody who drives a car, the amount of miles I drive my car, 800 to 1,000 miles a month, I would expect to be paying somewhere in the range of around $80 to $100 a month in fuel costs. When I charge my EV at home in my garage, I'm charging it for a month at around $12 to $15.
Wow.
For
a
month.
That's a big difference.
So the savings can be considerable.
Mm. We got an email from Cheryl. Cheryl writes, we bought a used Chevy Bolt in 2024. It was a learning curve, and we've had to search out charging stations on our routes. It was not too expensive, and we've saved lots of money on gas and maintenance. So Cheryl's certainly a convert there. Chris, I want to get back to new EVs. Talk about how much they cost and how that compares to a gas-powered car that you buy new, because I think a lot of us think of a new EV as being significantly more expensive than a new gas-powered car, but I don't know if we're correct or not.
Yeah. Well, there are any number of electric vehicles that are indeed expensive. Some of them well into six figures, but the same could be said for gas and diesel vehicles too, especially when you're considering the luxury end of the vehicle market. As was mentioned earlier, new car prices in general are increasing. They have increased significantly, and the average new car price, all kinds, is somewhere $51,000 and change. It's a lot. Mm-hmm. for many of us. The average electric vehicle is between $52,000 and $53,000 as a category. But that includes the most expensive big SUVs and luxury electric cars, as well as the more entry-level, more moderately priced vehicles. So as a category, electric vehicles still are more expensive. I always like to explain, though, that when you start to look at the total cost of ownership of driving the vehicle, is that it actually costs less for all the reasons that we've mentioned earlier. So it depends on what you're looking at. All of that said is that there are now a large number of electric vehicles from the traditional automakers, from some of the EV, pure EV startup companies that are as low as $29,000. The sweet spot is about $35,000. And even as some of the more fully featured electric vehicles are factored in, you can buy an electric vehicle that has four doors, has a hatchback, can put the family dogs and all the soccer equipment on Saturdays and take four people, five people perhaps, around town. Those vehicles are between $35,000 and $40,000. They go 250 to 300 miles of range. And are well-priced, well below the average new car price. So it is possible to buy a new electric vehicle at what I would consider to be affordable prices. The sweet spot for the automakers in pricing is the low to mid-30s for many of the vehicles in their new car inventory. So there are EVs today that are right in that spot.
Okay. Well, we've got a lot more to talk about. We're going to continue this conversation after a short break, and we've got lots of emails to write. We want to hear from you. Lots of emails to read, I should say. We want to hear from you. If you've got questions or comments, now's a good time to call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with our discussion about making the switch from a gas-powered vehicle to an EV. My guests are Electric Vehicle Association of Ohio board members Rick Liston and Chris Selleck, and Wired Magazine staff writer Ariane Marshall. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. We have a caller on the line. Hi, Stephanie. Thanks for calling. What's your question?
My question is, I'm very interested in purchasing an electric car, but I take a lot of road trips, and I'm concerned about the amount of places to charge the vehicle and the amount of time it would take for the vehicle to charge. Could you address my concerns there?
Certainly. Thank you, Stephanie. You're reading my mind because we were going to talk about that. But Rick, if you do you want to address Stephanie's
concerns? Yeah, I'd be happy to take that question. That is a common concern. We actually refer to that as range anxiety. And in people considering electric vehicles for the first time, that is one of the most common questions that we get. I can tell you that every month that goes by, the infrastructure for charging our electric vehicles improves dramatically. Over the first quarter of this year, we were on pace to add 1,000 new charging stalls every single month across the United States, and there are now over 70,000 such stalls installed across the United States, and that number, again, increasing every month. And with that, there's a goal of having a fast charging station every 50 miles.
And what does fast charging mean?
Fast charging are the charging stations that you use when you're on a road trip. When you're driving not locally, not in your region, when you're driving from state to state, you're driving hundreds of miles in a day, you need to stop and recharge your electric vehicle just like you have to stop and gas up your gas car. Mm-hmm. And those fast chargers are the chargers that we use for specifically for that purpose. And a typical charging session would last you somewhere in the order of 15 to 20 minutes, typically. Most of us stop and recharge our vehicles every 2 to 2.5 hours. Chris and I were joking on the way into the studio today, you know, there are other biological imperatives that mean that you need to stop and take breaks every once in a while. And I have made multiple state-to-state trips driving to our family in Oklahoma and other places in our electric vehicles, as my wife and I have not owned a gas vehicle for 3 years, actually.
Wow.
So, and with the infrastructure improvements that have occurred in the last 2 to 3 years, it really is not an issue anymore.
Yeah.
Yes, it adds perhaps 10% of time to a daily long distance drive compared to a gas car. But in exchange for that 10%, you get a much more pleasant driving experience. Electric vehicles are smoother, quieter, faster, more relaxing to drive on long trips. And as I mentioned, stopping to charge every 2 to 2.5 hours allows my wife and I a chance to use the restroom, to get snacks, to have a quick lunch. If we go into a place to actually sit down and have a lunch, invariably the car is finished charging way before we're finished with a meal.
Mm-hmm.
So again, you can plan if you're driving for 12 hours on a very, very long road trip one day, you can plan on taking somewhere between 3 and 4 stops on that trip, again, every 2 to 2.5 hours for 15 to 20 minutes at a time.
Okay. I got a message about this from my buddy Mark, who I've known for a long time. He told me, I've been driving a 2021 Tesla Model Y for 5 years and about to buy a 2026 Model Y. This year's model is even safer than the one I own now. As for range, we drove it from California to Cincinnati in 3 days, which included 18 stops to charge. It was beautiful. And Mark said, he recalled, this has been a little while ago that he did this, the stops were to refuel with electricity or maybe 20, maximum 30 minutes. But he said that it didn't really add much to the drive that was noticeable for him. And he said he got to talk to all the other Tesla owners who were standing around. He told me Tesla owners are like dog owners. You want to stand around and talk about your cars just like people want to talk about their dogs. So Mark is a fan. We've got some questions about batteries. Sarah asks, how much is a replacement battery and how well do batteries perform in cold weather below zero? Ariane, I'm going to see what you know about that. Are you with us, Ariane?
Yeah, sorry
okay.
about that.
Oh, that's okay.
Yes, replacement batteries can be pretty expensive. I'm not sure exactly what the cost is these days, but I know it can go again to the thousands of dollars. So that's a real expense. I will say that there were fears kind of early on in the American electric vehicle experiment that people were going to have to change out their batteries a lot. And that has not at all been the case. In fact, automakers have been kind of shocked by how long their batteries have lasted and how long a car can go, upwards of a decade before you need to actually change out that big battery that powers your car. So it's definitely something to think about, but I think something that it shouldn't necessarily be the number one issue if you're thinking about transitioning to electric vehicles. Sorry, you had a second part of that question that I've forgotten.
Sure. It was, how well do batteries perform in cold weather below zero?
Yes, this is a good question. I think something to consider if you live in a place that does get really cold and you're thinking about an electric vehicle. Again, this is technology that's gotten better over time. Batteries are not as bad as they used to be, but we are hearing from people who own these in cold places in the north, that during the wintertime, their batteries get somewhere around the 20 to 15 to 10% less range. And if you are taking one of those big old road trips all the time, I think that's probably not a lot of people, but some people do that. It is something to consider and something to think about, whether it's worth making more of those stops. And of course, something to think about as you're going on your, day-to-day activities. It's important that, if you charge your vehicle at home in your garage, that you really plug it in if you're losing that much range to extremely cold weather.
Did you want to add to that, Chris?
Sure. I don't want to get too geeky into the engineering and design.
Geeky. Go ahead.
But one of the things that we want everyone to understand when they're considering an electric car is that there is not a single battery that has to be replaced. In fact, modern electric vehicles have dozens or hundreds of batteries that are assembled in a pack that's in the bottom of the car. And that design allows the service centers and the manufacturers to diagnose and understand which of the individual cells or which of the packs within the large battery assembly might not be functioning properly or has, in fact, stopped working. If you think of the large D cell batteries, the big flashlight batteries that we buy for home use, that's what's inside a car battery pack. There are dozens or hundreds of them in smaller modules, and it's possible for the service centers to hook up a computer, look at what might be going wrong, and then to replace a small number of those battery individual cells or a pack. So having to replace an entire battery is really not a thing. It's quite possible to repair the batteries in an affordable, efficient manner.
Mm-hmm. And one, I'll just jump in here. One of the concerns, of course, is that this happens. Could this happen frequently? And am I going to need to replace the battery in 10 years? And the answer is, as Ariana kind of suggested, is that we found out that is really not the case. There, one of the examples I like to cite is the Tesla Model S, which first came on the market in 2012, and was one of the first mass marketed electric vehicles in the United States. So we're talking about cars that are now 14 years old, and fewer than 2% of those Tesla Model S's have required a battery replacement after 14 years. So manufacturers are really finding that these batteries will probably, in most cases, outlast the rest of the car.
Interesting.
So that's really not the concern that I think it's been made out to be.
Yeah. Chris, what about maintenance overall? I mean, gas-powered vehicles, as you mentioned, have, 2,000 or whatever moving parts. They need a lot of, mine always need a lot of stuff going on. How is maintenance overall? Is partial battery replacement just kind of the cost of doing business if you have an electric car? Just if it were to happen, just the way other maintenance is the cost of doing business with a gas-powered car?
Well, that's certainly the way I would personally look at it. Is it's a machine, and machines break from time to time. Our gas cars certainly break from time to time. But in practice, there have been commercial fully electric vehicles on the road since 2012, 2013. But if we think about even before that, the original Toyota Priuses, which are hybrid vehicles, but they have batteries in them. Many of those cars, 20-some years later, are still on the road. with their original battery packs. So we know for a significant period of time, a lot of miles, that electric vehicles with batteries perform consistently or on the road. The actual maintenance that needs to be done, there's no more oil changes. Right. There's there's an air cabin filter, but they're not all of the oil filters that have to be changed. The basic maintenance on a car in the first 3 to 5 years is changing the wiper blades, rotating the tires. And that's it. Mm-hmm. The incidence of battery problems is very low. Does it occur? Certainly. It's a machine and it's a computer. Things do go wrong, but the number of times that happens is pretty small.
Okay.
And I'd like to just, again, say that we're talking about entire battery replacements. One of the other concerns is, okay, what if my battery doesn't need to be replaced, but it's just aging? It's just aging. It's not going to be able to go as far. I like to point out that I'm driving a car that is now 7 years old. My electric vehicle is 7 years old. And I have noticed no degradation in the range 7 years after it was manufactured. Hmm. So nothing that I can detect. So the range at 7 years is the same as the manufacturer listed when the car was new.
Okay.
So these batteries are lasting much longer than we even hoped they would.
Yeah. Well, we got an email from another Mark, not my buddy Mark, but another Mark. And this is what Mark asks. I would love to get an EV. However, I live in a condo and park off street, so I don't have the ability to charge at home or at work consistently where I'm already paying to park. I recently got a hybrid thinking that could be a bridge and I could use all electric mode to drive to and from work. But every downtown charging station is in a pay lot. So on top of paying for my normal parking where there's no charging option, I would have to pay to park in a separate lot and pay for the charge. This is a massive barrier to making the full switch for someone like me. Are there suggestions on how to navigate charging so I'm not basically being penalized for not having a garage where I can install a personal charger?
I'll take that. There's no doubt that that's a difficult situation. I mean, I will have to admit that for those of us who find living with our electric vehicles to be very, very easy, that is due in part, and no small part, to the fact that we have access to charging at home, which is convenient and inexpensive. For those who do not have charging at home, it is a big concern. Now, there are states across the union, there are 11 states across the country that have mandated by law the right to charge, meaning that even renters, by law, as long as they bear the cost of installing an outlet, you know, at a location where they can charge their car, the owners of that rental property must allow the renters to do that. So now, unfortunately, Ohio is not one of those 11 states. But is
Kentucky or Indiana, are either of those on that list?
Kentucky and Indiana are not on that list of 11, no. So it is an issue that is being addressed. I understand the caller's, you know, concerns. And until the changes, you know, electric vehicles that's going to hold electric vehicle adoption back.
Okay. Well, we've got to take another quick break. I know we've got a lot of interest in this conversation. So if you've got questions or comments, give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wbxu.org. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with our conversation about electric vehicles. My guests are Electric Vehicle Association of Ohio board members Chris Selleck and Rick Liston, and Wired Magazine staff writer Ariane Marshall. You can join the conversation. Call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. We do have a caller on the line. Hi, Barbara. Thanks for your call. What's your question or comment?
Hi. My comment is that I have a hybrid, which I believe is the best option right now. I drive monthly to visit my father on the other side of the state. It's about 250 miles.
and I can do it in 3 to 3.5 to 4 hours. I do not stop. I don't need to. But when I get there, if I had a electric vehicle, there are no charging stations anywhere near it, where he lives in the rural area. So I wouldn't be able to get home. I would have to, I don't know how I would get the my vehicle charged. So I think right now, until there is a better infrastructure for charging and quicker charging, I never, even when I stop for gas, I never on a trip, I never stop for more than it takes to fill up the gas tank, mostly. In addition, we also drive to our daughter in South Carolina, an 8.5 hour drive. We stop once.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the EVs are not, I think hybrid is the better way, at least until the EVs are improved.
Well, thanks, Barbara. I appreciate that. Did you want to address that quickly, Rick?
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that, Barbara. I bought my first hybrid car in 2001. And between 2001 and 2021, so that 20 years, I owned nothing but hybrids, three different hybrids over that 20-year span. And I loved the hybrids at the time that I owned them. What I quickly discovered is what I loved most about the hybrids is when they were using the electric drivetrain, not the gas drivetrain, mm-hmm. right? And when I found that EV technology had improved and EV infrastructure had improved to permit long-distance driving, it made that switch from a hybrid to an EV not only an easy switch to make, but also one that makes a lot of sense. Why is that? Hybrids share a lot of the weaknesses that a gas car has because it has a gas engine in it, it has a transmission. None of those maintenance costs, none of those maintenance savings that we've been discussing go away. You incur all of those costs just like you do with a gas car. So I understand the caller's concerns about driving into rural areas, but I think that most people are surprised to find out when they really start looking into it, there may not be a charging station around the corner from her father's home. But almost certainly there are charging stations to and from that location that would permit the use of an electric vehicle in exactly that situation, because she could charge before she got to her father's home, and then after she left her father's home on the way back, charge again. I can tell you that there are almost no places in the continental U.S. that you can't get to using an electric vehicle.
Okay. Well, thanks for that call, Barbara. We appreciate it. We do have another caller. Oh, I'm sorry, Ariane, did you want to add to that?
Oh, yeah, I was just going to jump in quickly to say, I too understand folks like Barbara's hesitancy here in buying EVs. I'd say there's also a technology on the horizon. These cars are about to come out in the U.S. Called an EREV, or an extended range electric vehicle. So these vehicles have wheels that are always driven by an electric motor, but there's a small internal combustion engine on board that acts as a generator and recharges the battery when it gets low. And that's exciting for a lot of people because it actually gives the car a lot more range. We're seeing EREVs that have ranges of up to 700 miles. So I think there are these not only hybrids, but plug-in hybrids, these sort of in-between technologies for people who really want an electric vehicle but are sort of convinced for some reason or another that it's not quite going to fit into their lives.
Interesting. Well, thank you. We have Sina on the line. Hi, thanks so much for your call. What's your question? Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi there. This
Hello?
Is Hi, you're on the radio. What's your question?
I didn't hear my name. So anyway, my question is, when you have to replace the battery, or a part of the battery, what happens to those old batteries, and what about the environmental impact of that?
Okay, thank you. I think that's a great question. We've gotten that a couple times via email, too. Chris, you want to address that?
Sure. And it's a fair question because many of us look at electric vehicles as an environmental choice that fits into our green lifestyles and that wanting to know, where the materials come from to make the car and what happens when at the end of the life of the vehicle, or in this case, parts of the battery system. The reality is for batteries that nearly all of the components and chemicals in the battery system of an electric vehicle are recyclable and are indeed recycled. Why? The materials in those batteries are highly valuable. They don't get thrown in a landfill. So it is possible to recycle the materials that are in existing vehicle batteries to make new batteries. And that does happen in this country. It happens globally. The other reality is that if the battery is, I use the word singular, but mm-hmm. but if the battery pack is still working, but for example, the car was in an accident and the car was destroyed, but the battery pack is still in working condition, those battery packs are used in one of two ways. They can be actually removed from the original vehicle and installed in a second vehicle. And there's a growing secondary repair market. There's a large new business in Dayton that recycles electric vehicle components, including batteries, and installs them in other vehicles. The other thing that happens worldwide is that battery packs from used EVs, the vehicle has been in an accident, the vehicle has rusted, the vehicle itself is no longer drivable, those battery packs can be removed and they are literally hung on the wall in a factory or office with many other battery packs from vehicles. And they're used to create backup power supplies. And they're ideal for that use because they don't have to charge quickly. They just have to be available storing energy when there's a power failure to the building, the office or the factory. So the battery pack in a car, you know, the life of a car is anywhere from 10 to perhaps as much as 20 years. But the life of batteries that are used in electric vehicles can live on in some sort of backup power supply function for 25, 30, 45 years. And this is already being done around the world. It's starting to be done in the United States. So these things aren't just thrown in a landfill in this country.
Well, great. Well, we've got a lot more to get to. Thank you for that question. We appreciate it. I'm going to read your question on the air, your comment on the air, David. David says, I had an EV for 5 years. There was very little battery degradation. Thank you for that, David. I know we're not going to get to all these questions because we're running out of time, but Tim asks, can you discuss the EV tax? I understand there's a tax one must pay when purchasing an EV due to not paying gas tax. Ariane, is that something that's nationwide? Does that vary from state to state? What's the deal with that?
Yeah, so that's something that's going to come down to the states. I know several states have decided that as the listener said that people, because they don't pay into the gas tax, they have to contribute to the funding for infrastructure in some way. So they charge some sort of annual fee or an initial fee to get registered. Chris or Rick might have a better idea of exactly what that looks like in Ohio.
Rick?
Yes, in Ohio, there is a $200 fee, an annual $200 fee for drivers of electric vehicles to offset the fact that as a driver's electric vehicles, we're not paying gas taxes for road use. You know, you can debate the merits of that either way for a long time. It depending on how much you drive. I mean, if you sit down and do the math, $200 a year, if you're talking about a car that gets an average gas mileage, comparing it to a gas car that gets an average gas mileage, you're talking about the same amount of taxes that a gas driver would drive if they drove 18,000 miles a year. Hmm. So the comment that EV owners don't pay taxes or don't pay their fair share of taxes to maintain the roads is just not true, at least in the state of Ohio, because, you know, obviously most of us drive far fewer than 18,000 miles a year.
Sure.
So, but I must emphasize that although that, you know, first off, I think that EV owners, like all drivers, need to you know, bear their fair share of road maintenance. Perhaps there is a more equitable way to do that. And the other thing I would say is, you're saving far more than $200 a year in savings for driving electric vehicles. So that kind of balances that too.
Yeah. We got a question from Ted. Ted asks, since batteries deteriorate with time, how is range affected when buying a used EV? Are there red flags consumers should look for? Chris, thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think part of the answer is that late model EVs that are 2, 3, 5 years old, the battery degradation is going to be small, if at all. Rick shared his personal experience, but the batteries are well made and they perform over time consistently. My advice in considering an electric vehicle is to ask the seller for a report on the battery condition. And one of the services that's out there is called Recharge. You know, the owner of the vehicle can sync their vehicle to that online service. It analyzes and reports and actually produces a printout that will show you that of the battery's original capacity, it still has 99% or it has 92%, whatever the case might be. So that's a way that as a buyer of a used vehicle, you can know for certain. Some of the car dealers have access to tools and diagnostics in their shops that if you're buying a used EV from a dealership, you can ask them to provide you documentation of the condition of the battery as well. So there are a couple of ways to know for certain that battery is in good working condition.
Okay. We have just a very short amount of time left. So a very quick question from Rap. Rap asks, are there any local events in the area where I might experience an EV? How would I find them? Can somebody answer that quickly?
Yes, thank you for that question, Rap. Yes, there are. Our organization, the Electric Vehicle Association of Ohio, hosts ride and drives frequently throughout the region. We have chapters in Cincinnati, Dayton, Cleveland, growing chapters in all of these communities. And that's what people like Chris and I do. That's how Chris and I met. We provide educational opportunities for members of the public to come out and really talk to people who own electric vehicles. That we found that there's so much misinformation floating around in the press and online these days about electric vehicles. The best way to learn about them is really to talk to people who live with them every day.
Okay.
And we do that. And in many of these events, we permit members of the public to drive our own personal vehicles. Studies have shown that 90% of people who drive an electric vehicle purchase an electric vehicle as their next car.
Wow. So check out the Electric Vehicle Association of Ohio and nationwide, and you can find out about those events. Cynthia emails very quickly, just a recommendation to the caller who wondered how they could charge their electric vehicle when they couldn't do so at work or at home. There are more and more charging stations in shopping lots. Keep an eye out for those, and coordinating grocery or other retail shopping with charging might be one possibility. So thanks for that advice, Cynthia. Well, I had pages and pages more questions to ask you all, but we have run out of time. I've been talking with Wired Magazine staff writer Ariane Marshall and Electric Vehicle Association of Ohio board members Chris Selleck and Rick Liston. Thank you all so much for your time today and for this informative conversation.
Thank you.
Thanks for inviting us.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez Cornu. If you miss our program live, you can find Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening.